This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
What's up, guys? We're back. This is the Bama Balance, and I'm excited to be sitting here again on a Monday after a big weekend, fun weekend, great win against Tennessee, and looking forward to the rest of the year, and just trying to finish out this semester strong. I know school's starting to heat up a little bit, and everybody may be getting a little nervous as we're inching closer to those final grades, but I'm excited to be back with y'all.
Yeah. No, it's fun. It's fun. Can we ever stop talking about that game?
I don't know. I don't think so.
It's just such a – it was such a great game.
It's been a fun football year so far.
It was such a great game. I had this conversation with a friend of mine after the game, and, they were saying something like, that we look good. Alabama looks great. And we still got some stuff to work on, right? I think we're still susceptible to some of those big run plays. And they said that they were hoping that we'd be able to correct some of those things or make those tweaks. And I said, you know what? I think we're actually peaking at the right time. You don't want to peak too soon.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think if we continue to work on those aspects of the game that, you know, we're still vulnerable to, I think that – and if we do that well and continue to win out, I think that by – SEC championship time, or by the end of the regular season anyway, we'll just be hitting our peak.
Can you imagine that? I feel like we're yet to have played a
complete game.
Complete all aspects on a Q game. And when we do, it'll be fun to watch.
Can you imagine when that happens?
I don't know who beats us.
Honestly.
Maybe Ohio State.
Yeah.
If we're like at our best.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone does. Because, I mean, we've just done nothing but improve every week.
Right.
Clearly, after week one. But,
yeah, yeah.
Also, another thing about that game, the playing Dixieland Delight twice, just so funny to me.
Yes.
And it was amazing. Because, I mean, they played it that first time, which I thought was a great time to play. You got to play it after we score.
Yeah.
Because we're into it. We're into the game. Like, vibes are up.
That's right.
But then when that two-minute warning hit and they're like,
play it again.
Why not? Play it again. That was just, I mean, I had already had my cigar lit. I don't know about y'all, but I mean, I was.
You were ready.
I was elated in that moment.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
6 minutes is when I remember us lighting them up.
Firing it up.
Which at that point, I still had something in the back of my head saying, is this really a good idea? But I was like, all right, whatever. Everybody else is doing it. I've got to do it.
I figured 3 scores was too much for them to get out of.
Right.
I wonder if we've ever played Dixieland Delight twice.
I don't remember it. At least since the time I've been here, I don't remember it.
I haven't heard it.
And it's only come back. It only came back.
2018, I think.
I think that's right. 18 or 19.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's right.
So first for everything.
That's it. So I think we're on our way to peaking. I think it reminds me of, Duke basketball. Duke basketball starts to peak around Final Four time. That's what it reminds me of right now for us.
I hope so. And I mean, just so much ahead.
I know.
Fun games, scary games.
A lot to look forward to.
A lot of shifts in coaching around the college.
That's true.
It's a good time to be a fan of the sport.
Yeah, and I feel like everybody now is getting to a point where we're maybe a little bit more, it may be getting kind of like the NFL, like any mm-hmm. given week,
mm-hmm.
anything can really happen. Mm-hmm. So that's what's fun about it. But I'm really glad we're back. Today we're going to talk about a very special topic to the three of us, and we brought it to attention almost every week we've came in here and talked, and very fitting that we just wrapped up Suicide Awareness Month and the week here that we've had, and you know, just excited to talk about it. So we'll be back in a few minutes to cap it off, and this is the BAM Balance.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Back to the BAMA Balance. As we mentioned in between or before our break, today we're talking about, you know, I think it's a very important subject, very special subject, but also, I mean, a pretty heavy subject of suicide. And I think, you know, as UA is wrapped up, it's, you know, it just had a week dedicated to suicide awareness. You know, I think, you know, it's on us to do our part to help spread and raise that awareness, and also understand that, I mean, suicide is something that, like Brooks just said, like during the break, like it's real. Like it's easy to put it out of your mind as something that's like, oh, that doesn't, you know, that would never really affect me. But I mean, I think it affects more people than they realize. And it doesn't, you don't realize how much it affects you until it happens.
Right. Right. It's I don't know if it's surprising to me or if it's astonishing to me how many people, you know, when I've talked to them, have been affected by the death of someone by suicide. It's either a family member or a friend of theirs or a close friend. You know, suicide and being those who survived the death of a friend or a family member by suicide is we don't talk about that much.
Yeah, I agree. Especially on college campus, I've felt it numerous times. And it's almost like, you know, it takes everybody by surprise when it happens. But there for a second, like, you've got people, I mean, it's an awesome community we live in just purely because of the outreach that you get when somebody you've been close to has been affected by it. But I feel like it also brings the campus together in a way almost that, you know, it's just very full of support. So I feel like, you know, handling it is, I mean, there's so many different things that this brings up, but when it's handled the right way, I feel like it does bring people closer. Saying that it's a good thing it happens, but it's good to have a community where you get brought closer when something like this tragic happens.
You know, so I've been here, this is my eighth year, and over the course of those 8 years, we've had, you know, students who've died by suicide, and you know, we have, you know, a number of resources to provide support through our counseling center, and now a student group dedicated to suicide prevention and education. But I was wondering, you know, particularly last year, I know we had a number of deaths, particularly in the Greek community, IFC community, and I was just wondering how, you know, based on your own experiences, how do you feel the university has responded to it? How open does it feel that students are able to talk about the loss of a friend or a family member through suicide?
Well, I mean, for me personally, I, at least my experience with it, was absent of the university. Right. So, like, I can't really speak on personal experience about, you know, what the university does, but I do know that they, I mean, you look at least when I say personal experience, I mean, I see what they do, and it's a lot of great things. Mm-hmm. Nothing for me in particular, just because mine was a family friend outside of Tuscaloosa. But I think that there's definitely, I mean, there's a gravity that suicide has, and I think that the university treats that well and respects that well, mm-hmm. because of the way in which they try to help guide others to that situation, mm-hmm. with their you know, counseling availability, trying to provide students with opportunities to try to internalize and really reconcile mm-hmm. what it is that they've witnessed, what it is that has affected them.
I do agree. Mine was with the university, and my freshman year, one of our pledge brothers died to suicide in January. And I feel like the university did a really good job of sending us help. Mm-hmm. When we were notified of what happened, they had people there, counselors and upper hands in the IFC, that mm-hmm. sort of thing, to talk about it with us and, you know, just help us through it. But aside from just the purely the university, the Greek life as a whole came mm-hmm. together, I feel like, mm-hmm. to help us out. You know, whether that was people sending flowers, I know we do that all the time if something like this happens, mm-hmm. but also, like, you know, just friends and other organizations reaching out. So mm-hmm. I do feel like the university as a whole comes together when something like that happens mm-hmm. to support the group of guys that it may have affected. And I mean, even if it didn't, you know, just affect you, sometimes people need help with that too. I mean, they might have right. known the person, but weren't really close friends with them, maybe felt bad for not talking to them in a class or something. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's definitely something that, like you said, the university is aware of how big of a deal this is and how many people it affects. And I think they do a very good job of helping those in need when something does happen.
Yeah. I think more and more, as universities in general have become aware of student deaths by suicide, that campuses have been more diligent about knowing what students need by working with students and providing them with those services and that type of thing. So I agree with you, you know, Brooks. I think we do a great job here. I think in terms of our own personal experiences with suicide and having survived the death of a friend or family member by suicide, that, again, that oftentimes is something that not many people talk about. And I don't think I realized until our last episode, Edward, that you had that experience about a month ago, around the same time in October.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it might have been like this week last year.
Really?
When I was told about it, because I know her funeral was right before fall break.
Okay.
So, but I mean, yeah, like it was such a surreal experience, because again, like I said earlier, I mean, I was in that same boat of, mm-hmm. you know, suicide, you know, it's real. I knew it was real. I knew it was a big deal and it affects a lot of people, but mm-hmm. it's hard to really like understand what that means until you experience it. Mm-hmm. Rather experience someone you love, being, you know, taken from you that way. Mm-hmm. So I just remember when I, you know, when my dad first called me like that night, it was a Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I remember being more shocked than anything. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is so, like, this is, I don't know. I just didn't know how to feel. Mm-hmm. I completely, mm-hmm. you know, I felt weird, and then I felt bad because I was thinking like, I feel like I should be more emotional about this. And I was just, I guess it was, you know, I hadn't really come to terms with what had actually happened. Mm-hmm. And then about a week later at the funeral, that's when it kind of, reality really set in. Mm-hmm. Because you see a lot of people in a certain context. And I saw a lot of people in the context of my friend. Mm-hmm. But then it was my friend who, you know, we're at her funeral and then she's gone and I'm seeing all those people and it's just odd. Mm-hmm. And then I remember it was during the visitation when, you know, I got to her mom, I just immediately just started crying and couldn't even get words out. Just seeing, like, being face to face with, like, as much as it hurt me,
right?
I can't even imagine being a parent,
yeah.
Or brother, mm-hmm. like going through that, seeing and witnessing, you know, a family member just in that way. I don't know. It was just like, it was surreal. And I think that's when I really kind of fully came to terms with it. That was when it really, hit me and all the emotion that I was, I guess, feeling kind of came out in that moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was heavy.
That's all. It's a lot to absorb and a lot to process. Death, the death of anyone close to us and who we love is, you know, that news and experience is difficult. And I think when it comes to the loss of a friend or family member by suicide, it makes it even more of a challenge because you may or may not know their reasons for them taking their own life. You may or may not know their reasons for why they were feeling in such a moment of despair and hopelessness that it can leave a lot more questions. How did you kind of cope with the news, Edward, and how has it been for you now, this being a year out?
I mean, I think it's something that I've come to terms with, you know, and like I said, like, I think kind of getting the news, it was just, again, it's surreal. And you just kind of don't really fully comprehend what's happening. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's today, it's still saddening. And I do think about Peyton from time to time. Mm. But I think it is, you know, knowing who she was and knowing her as well as, like, my whole family, like, we just, as well as we did, it is truly one of those moments where I know if she could, like, say anything to me that she would say, like, to not, mm-hmm. you know, it was, so for more context, she was always our babysitter. Mm-hmm. She was our babysitter growing up for me and my, right. my sisters, but she was not that much older than my oldest sister.
Okay.
So she just kind of became
like another sister
to me.
Right.
And one thing she would always say, she's from Birmingham, but she went to school in the panhandle, a small college in the panhandle of Florida, mm-hmm. Which is not that far from where I'm from in Dothan. Mm-hmm. So, but every time she would leave, like, her house, it was that Dr. Seuss quote, I think, that was like, "Don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened." Mm-hmm. And I just know that she would say that to me today.
Yeah.
Anytime I get sad or anytime I think about her, I know that she wouldn't want those thoughts to be of lament, or uh-huh. of sadness, but rather joy of the times, you know, we all got to spend with her. So mm-hmm. I think that's just kind of how I mm-hmm. reconcile it, knowing what her response would be.
Right. It's interesting that, that you remember, the date. And so, right, because it's been a year out. And so, I think there's something about maybe that first year in any death, there's something about that first year, that can make it challenging, difficult, to understand or even fully accept that person's death, and particularly a death by suicide. that first year can be, I think, particularly difficult. Still searching for answers to questions that may never come or won't ever come, and trying to still make sense of, you know, why they decided to die by suicide. And it takes a lot. I mean, it can take a lot of time and energy going circles and circles, but to be able to resolve it and feel, you know, to bring some sense of maybe closure when there isn't perfect closure, mm-hmm. Is something to certainly strive for and hopefully get a sense of. Bruce, I know you mentioned that it was one of your pledge brothers.
It's one of our pledge brothers. And that's one of those things that for us as a pledge class, like, you know, pledge ship's supposed to bring you tighter, and which it did. But this was one of those moments where we were like, all right. I mean, in that situation, when we found out that news, it was almost like we had us and that was it.
Right.
You know? And I mean, it really did, I think, brought us closer. Yeah. And also made, I know for me, I can speak on myself, but it made me want to become a better pledge brother because, mm-hmm. you know, what if I would have had a conversation and it was totally unexpected? Mm-hmm. But those are, I mean, like you said, the reasoning and, I mean, that all of that's getting thrown around in our heads.
Sure.
And, you know, what if one of us would have reached out? Would that have been the difference or something like that? Right. So right. I think, I mean, it definitely made us want to check on each other a lot more and see how everybody's holding up. And I think it gives us a reason that if we ever are having problems or thoughts, you know, I mean, I think every single one of us would love to hear each other out about it and talk to somebody.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. How did you all hear about the news? How did you learn about it?
It was actually, we were getting ready for study hall because uh-huh. we did that freshman year. So, uh-huh. and that was even like outside of pledge ship and all. So it was a Wednesday.
Okay.
And we were getting ready for study hall where our pledge trainer texted us, and we were really close with our pledge trainer at this point. Mm-hmm. He texted us like, hey, we need to have a meeting in the pool room at the house. And it didn't really give us any reasoning. So we're all nervous, like, oh gosh, oh, yeah. what could he be calling us in about? Like, one of us really messed up. That's what we were thinking.
Yeah.
But it never once crossed our mind. Because, you know, people had seen him the day before.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't like he was totally straight away from the house. Like, he had been around. And he called us in, and we saw some people that didn't necessarily belong in this conversation with us. Like I was saying earlier, the higher ups,
and, yeah.
He was the one to break it to us. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and that was very emotional even yeah. for him. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of going through the same stuff we were like, yeah. I mean, he could have checked on yeah. Connor and, yeah, I mean, it really did just bring the whole house a lot closer. Mm-hmm. So
what was your initial reaction?
Shock, like yeah. you said. Yeah. You don't, I mean, it's kind of hard to even, you don't really know how to react. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the fear of like, oh no, you know, right. could we have done something different?
Uh-huh.
Then that leads into all that. So uh-huh. like you said, I mean, it was really Bob. The time we went to the funeral, we all loaded up on a charter bus and
yeah.
went to his funeral. And that was really when we all, you could tell mm-hmm. it hit us like mm-hmm. this is real. And I feel like that's the instant that brought us all that much closer together. Being with each other through that time was able to help all of us and give us comfort, and all of our families did great. Supporting us and mm-hmm. our house mom, seniors, yeah. upperclassmen. So,
yeah. yeah, it sounds like it's still something that certainly has stuck with you. Is it something that your pledge class still sort of reminisces about or thinks about?
Absolutely, especially when that time of the year comes around.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's when you'll see it most. I'd say that first year was definitely probably
right.
the most. Now it's not to say that, you know, I mean, I think about it a good bit, but it's phased out on the amount that we talk about it as like a whole.
Sure.
But when that time of the year comes back up.
It's like that anniversary time, right? Anniversary date.
Yeah.
No, I know I feel the same way. And about, so there's a friend of mine that I grew up with, and we'd stayed in touch probably not as frequently as I would have liked or as maybe we needed to. But somebody, I mean, someone I grew up with, our family grew up with, you know, we were, our families were close, and they had, their family had three kids, two sons and a daughter. And the middle son, Michael, was the one that, died by suicide. And, you know, Michael, growing up, Michael was a more, gregarious, sort of outgoing, happy-go-lucky kind of kid growing up. Wouldn't take things too seriously and an all around good guy. But I remember after after our family moved, we continued to stay in touch with their family and their kids and Michael, and over time learned that, Michael had developed, problems with alcohol and substances and underneath that, had been dealing with depression and not quite sure exactly what that was about. Never really learned about what that depression was about. I think, part of Michael's substance use and abuse was certainly trying to cope with that depression. And then I remember getting the news from from my mom at that point, because I think she got the news from Michael's mom that Michael had died by suicide. And at that point, he was living at home with his parents for some. I think he was experiencing some difficult moments in his life where his parents said, "Why don't you come back and live with us for a bit?" When I got the news that he died by suicide, I really struggled with trying to understand the reasons for Michael's death, and wishing that I had maybe known more so I could have reached out. I think the frustrating part for me was not having known more. I think sometimes, depression or, mental health issues can be very secretive, particularly within families. And I get it and I understand it. And mind you, that was decades, maybe, over 20 years ago now we're talking. And I think back on that time and I wonder, would things have been different now that issues of mental health are more prevalent and more openly talked about. I wonder if that might have changed things. But I often think to that time and still think, are there things that we could have done that I could have done differently? And the frustrating thing is I'll never know, I'll never get that chance. But it's a death that, death of a friend that, still sticks with me. I think the way I've tried to make sense of it is that, knowing Michael and some of the things he was dealing with, he was not able to shake the demons he was dealing with. I think that, maybe no matter how hard he tried, he just couldn't escape them, which feels sad to me. And I can see where that could lead somebody to a state of being hopeless as
no
well.
No doubt.
It's
a lot.
It's a lot. It is, we never fully know the exact reasons, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think it all does go down to, I mean, the link to mental health, I mean, it's just clear.
Right.
And, you know, I think about that. Like, I think a lot about, you know, could I have done something differently? I think that's a very reasonable thing for someone to ask themselves when someone they love has taken their life. But I mean, it is one of those things that it's hard to reconcile, but I mean, you gotta, you have to, it's hard, but it's necessary.
Right. It's hard to know how to move on. And at the same time, there's sort of the necessity to be able to move on and not to linger for our own mental health's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But how do we take that experience and be able to move on, to maybe help others, and help understand ourselves and our process so that we can help others.
Yeah. Pass on what we have learned.
Yeah.
Well, that'll do it for our first segment of the Bama Balance, and stay tuned. We'll be right back for our next one.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Everybody to the Bama Balance, and thanks for joining us today on the second segment as we talk about suicide. Really, probably one of the heaviest discussions we've had to date, I think.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
And as we were talking last segment about, you know, our experiences with friends, family members, or those close to us who died by suicide. You know, we also talked about, during the break, we talked about what we're left with sort of in the aftermath, of that person's death, by suicide. And, again, you know, we're left with a lot of questions, a lot of, the need to know answers so we can resolve it for ourselves. And the reality is we may never know the answers to that questions. To those questions, which then kind of led us also to, you know, how do we talk to friends and those that we care about if we believe or we think that they may be considering suicide? There are a lot of a number of myths that are out there. You know, one of the biggest ones is that, you know, if you talk with somebody about whether or not they're thinking about suicide, that just puts the thought into their head. And, you know, that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, one of the things that we know through QPR training and Ask, Persuade, Refer, which is our campus version of QPR, brief version of QPR, is that to be able to open up that discussion directly with somebody that you care about, as to whether or not they're contemplating suicide, brings a lot of relief to that person, because you've opened the door. You've opened the door as being someone that they can trust, someone that they can confide in, to talk about their thoughts of suicide. And as we talked about that during the break, again, I think it's one of the hardest questions to approach a friend or family member with, someone that you care about. And I don't know, how would Can you imagine that being for the both of you to be able to have that conversation with a friend or a family member?
Like you were saying, I think that is just a there's no other way around it. That's a tough question.
Yeah.
One, to ask. Mm-hmm. Two, I think, to probably receive. Mm-hmm. But more on the receiving end, I feel like it'd be almost a relief.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you have to look at it in the fact of, okay, somebody does care.
Right.
And if one person cares, you know, that may be my friend. Mm-hmm. Well, I guarantee you my family cares. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you my other friends care.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the acceptance factor in it is probably easier than the asking the question
right
of it.
Right.
Because then again, you know, you've heard those myths and stuff, and
yeah,
that may be floating in the back of your head. But after all, I feel like going back, if I could have had that conversation, you know, I feel like that's a question that I'd at least give it a shot to ask.
Because mm-hmm.
you never know. I mean, it may change mm-hmm. something. It may not. But at least you gave it a shot.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So if you had had that opportunity with Connor to ask that question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. You never know.
I think it's just, again, it's such a heavy thing and like a hard thing to ask someone. But I think the thought that keeps coming to my head is, you know, I would rather have that difficult conversation than have like a friend or a family of mine, right, family member of mine, like go through.
Mm-hmm.
Go through kind of that whole just dealing with suicide. I'd rather talk to them about it as in a hopes that, you know, okay, if I'm wrong in this assumption, then good, they're not considering suicide. And if they are, then I hope that this conversation would help.
Right. Right.
And it doesn't make it necessarily easier,
mm-hmm.
but mm-hmm. I think that it's still a necessary thing, and it goes back to a kind of, I think we all have touched on a little bit of how, you know, knowing what we know now, we wish we would have done more,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
is hard to put. I mean, it's hard for anyone to put that on themselves realistically, because sure. I mean, yeah, knowing what we know now, we would have done more, but we didn't know that then. But since we do know now, it is, there's a certain level to where it is on us to respond, and to be more intentional, because, you know, I see how it affected me, and I see how it affected members of my family and other mm-hmm. friends of mine,
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't want that to happen to anyone else,
right?
On either ends of that, whether it's the person doing it or those that they're leaving behind. So, I mean, yes, it's a hard conversation, but it's just a necessary one.
Yeah.
If you think that someone, might be struggling with that, I'd always say err on the side of caution, right, in the sense of you should talk to them, not, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you're just overthinking. No, in this situation, overthinking is probably not a horrible thing to do.
It would be, it's much more preferable to engage in that conversation than it is to not.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. As many students as I've seen, so fortunately I have not had to raise that conversation with any other friends or family members. But in working with a number of students over the years, who've presented and who I've worked with to address issues of their depression or other really severe issues of mental health, there are, you know, certain indicators, certainly, that lead me to ask that question, a degree of hopelessness, a degree of sometimes anger, particularly in men, if they're angry or just unable to express anger or if they are sort of bottling up some things. I think that there are some indicators that lead me to ask that question. And every time I go down that road, I like, it's a white knuckle experience, because I'm not sure exactly how that person's going to respond. I kind of think I know how they're going to respond. But that white knuckle experience is all about opening up a conversation that feels risky and feels uncertain. But the moment I do, almost 100% of the time, I've felt a sense of relief, and so has the other person, because it removes that sort of a block to that conversation, right? It's a conversation you don't want to have, but it's needed, it's necessary. So to be able to ask somebody that I care about or that I'm working with as a client, are you thinking about suicide? Are you thinking about killing yourself? And if the answer is yes, then it opens up a whole different world of, okay, tell me more, what do we need to do? And we can take some steps to prevent it. And I think that's the key. If we don't know, it's hard to know what to do to prevent, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like almost you'd rather be relieved than, you know, it hang over your head because you didn't ask the question.
Right.
But I do understand exactly where, you know, that is a tough question.
And I'd much rather know and be relieved than me not asking the question, as a friend certainly. And if something happened to where they did die by suicide, really kind of regretting the fact that I didn't ask and regretting that I could have done something potentially in that situation. So I think that's a hard thing, and particularly for men. I don't know. How do you approach that conversation if you're a college man with a friend?
Honestly, I mean, not having had to do that yet, I'm not 100% sure. I feel like everybody's circumstance is different, and I feel like based off of how close you are, what type of friends you are, that leads to maybe doing it in different ways for everybody. And also the type of person you are. Like, I mean, you know, I'd like to say that I'll talk to anybody and not shy away from a conversation, especially a tough one.
Right.
But how that gets brought up or how that gets done is kind of up to your own discretion and maybe different from person to person. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you could put a gauge on that really unless you have done it. That's just my thoughts on that.
How for you?
I would agree with that. I think it's one of those things where, I mean, it's never not going to be scary or difficult, but it's definitely more so the first time. Trying to, you know, and again, context is important. It's like, how well do you know this person? Like, to what level of a friend are they? Are they a family member? Like, I think there's a lot of nuance that goes into that. But, I mean, it's still, I think, again, like I said before, it's, you'd rather have that awkward and difficult conversation.
And even in some way, regardless of that level of relationship, if it's a friend or someone you're acquainted with that you know that you've talked to, can you ask that person if you have an inclination or if you have a worry or concern that they might be considering suicide, how comfortable would you be able to say those words or ask that question, are you considering suicide, versus are you thinking about hurting yourself, which is a different question?
I feel like that's definitely a different question. And honestly, if you were to go in the route of, are you wanting to hurt yourself? I feel like that opens up the box for maybe to ask that other question. And yet again, I feel like this is all comes back to context. And, you know, I mean, there's so many factors that go into this. Where are you at right then? What time is it?
Sure.
So I honestly, I mean, hopefully I never have to experience asking that question. But if I were to get some sort of inclination, like you were saying, or just have the slightest feeling, talking about this with us especially has encouraged me to go ahead and ask, because I'd rather ask and, you know, feel secure with what I've done up until that point than to not ask. And like you said, something bad happens and you feel like it's on you then.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, I think one of the most valuable programs we have on campus is our Tide Against Suicide program, and students Tide Against Suicide in terms of providing the awareness and educational resources, but also the training. You know, QPR training, question, persuade, refer, something that Michael Dobbs brought up a couple episodes ago. And that is like the gold standard training of how to intervene with someone, how to best ask those questions about whether or not they're considering suicide. And it puts you through several scenarios that get you kind of acclimated to how to ask that difficult question. And really, maybe more importantly, questions not to ask, like, oh, why are you thinking of, are you thinking of hurting yourself? Or you're not thinking about hurting yourself, are you? Those are the kinds of questions that really divert away from the more direct question, the more direct concern. So I think one of the most valuable resources in training is that QPR training. And, you know, as we've been talking through this episode, it'd be great if we had somebody from Tide Against Suicide or that student group kind of talk us through more about what QPR training is and what it entails. I know it's offered throughout the year, and so I'd encourage anyone to take advantage of that as it's being offered on our campus. You know, this has been by far one of the more deeper and more heavier conversations I think we've had so far. And I think there are so many other levels that we can explore and take with it. But and realizing just, you know, how much time we do have each episode, it's probably an ongoing conversation, I think. But with that, you know, stick with us for our last segment. And this is the Bama Balance.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
As we were just on our break, we're kind of laughing. We don't even know where to go from here.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a ton to talk about, and this is just a prominent thing that needed to be talked about, and I'm glad we've done that today because it's definitely even helped me to some extent. You know, I've never asked myself that question. Mm-hmm. Would I be able to ask that question?
Yeah.
On college campuses, especially for men, and especially more recent, I feel like this has almost became a problem that definitely needs to be talked about, and people need to be aware, and people need to know how to handle this if somebody they're close with may seem to be affected or may seem to be questioning doing something to this extent. So hopefully we've raised a little bit of awareness by talking about that today.
So it's like we can't afford to not ask the question, to a friend or someone we care about, are you thinking of suicide? Because it's difficult, you know, I think it's so, you know, Brooks mentioned we were kind of laughing at the break, and really it's been so heavy the last couple segments is we needed a bit of a break, a bit of a relief to sort of not lighten things up, but just to take a sigh.
Regroup a little bit.
Regroup a bit, yeah. But I agree. I agree with Brooks. I think that in terms of, you know, certainly for everyone on our campus and for college men who we know have a difficult time reaching out for help, it's even more important to, for us who care you know, to take them in our confidence and to be able to have those discussions, to ask those questions, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's you know, again, we're trying to raise awareness. I think it's just a big part of, it's a large part of kind of the whole idea behind what we're doing here.
Right.
Cause I think this is kind of where a lot of things come to a point, with mental health, especially with, like you said, with college men who are so hesitant to ask for help. So I think it's just a reminder and almost a call to action in a lot of ways, just to be like,
it's good,
you know, let's be intentional, let's be cognizant, let's be wary of how we're, or wary of how others are doing.
Right.
Especially those close to us, because you know, we might not notice things at first, but if we really pay attention, we can really see a lot that's going on. Mm-hmm. And we might be able to see a lot going on behind the scenes that we don't really know all about. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's that awkward conversation that needs to happen. But, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of taking what we've learned and making sure that we don't, no one ever wants to be in that spot at the end of the day, whether it's on either end. Mm-hmm. So just trying to avoid that and help people get the help they need.
Yeah, I
do love how you said be intentional there. Right. I feel like, especially in today's time as a society, that this is something we should take up and adopt. That like, you know, this is real. This is something that needs to be talked about. And I think our country does a great job of supporting everybody for numerous amounts of reasons, but I mean, this is one of those that, you know, if you come together as a whole community, country, this is stuff you can almost prevent in a way. I know I saw a picture the other day. I'm not sure if you've ever seen this. I'm not sure if it was recent, but there was a lady that was about to jump off a bridge, and a guy driving, 18-wheeler driver, saw the lady, so he called up, you know, all the 18-wheelers in the area. Well, they had all parked side by side up under the bridge to where, like, I mean, it would be impossible for her to. And I just think that spoke, you know, massive numbers of just people coming together for the right reason and supporting each other.
Wow, that's powerful. That's powerful. It really then, you know, resonates and I think illustrates how we're wanting to create and maintain our culture of caring here at the university, and what do we need to do to know how to be a part of that? What kind of information do we need to be able to have? What sort of training do we need to be able to have to be able to contribute to that culture of caring where we care for others and be able to make this a place where everyone is feeling valued and cared for, and particularly, you know, when it comes to seeking help, and for the guys out there, that they can feel more comfortable, more secure in asking for help, and also more knowledgeable about where help and services are on campus. For each other, you know, this it kind of led us to the realization it'd be great to have someone from Tide Against Suicide as one of our future guests, and to talk more about this issue and more about what QPR, question, persuade, refer, entails, and how best to engage all our campus, not just our collegemen, but all our campus in that training. You know, one of the things that when I was a director at Georgia Tech, one of the goals that I had was to have the entire campus trained in QPR, and that starts with students and staff and faculty, and I often thought it'd be kind of neat to see, you know, how many students we could get, at least starting with student side, how many students we could get trained, and how many student organizations could get their members trained in it. I mean, we can do the same thing here. I think it'd be kind of a neat, neat goal to have.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, that's 44,000 people that would know, I think around that number,
42, 44.
Yeah. Okay. So around that number that would know what to do in that instance. And even if it's not that many, if it's just half, it's a 1 out of 2 chance somebody's going to know what to do. But the beautiful thing about this is that we've got a great community at the university and great leaders, great professors, great students that could, and you never know, it may be a student talking to a professor.
That's right.
That would have to say something one day. So I just suggest everybody just love on one another and be good friends. And if you have to ask that question, don't shy away from it, because you'd rather have a good outcome than something negative. So I'm super glad we had this conversation. It needed to be done, and we're looking forward to building on this in the future. So that'll wrap it up for today's episode. Follow us on Instagram at the Bama Balance. And my name's Brooks.
I'm Edward.
I'm Dr. Tony Perez.
And this has been the Bama Balance.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you're in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.